our last speaker, Stephanie Alasomene. It's a great pleasure to introduce Stephanie. So Stephanie did her work, her earliest work with Trouvé and Eunice while in Paris. And then she's been living in CIS for a year, and she's coming back to Paris to take her first position. So very excited. Thank you, Stephanie, for being here.
My talk today will be a kind of advertisement for generative models and stochastic algorithm, in particular to deal with the population average problem and some image analysis, well, if I have time, more general image analysis. It's going to be something really close to the first part of Saran's talk. So the context is, and the motivation, are computational anatomy's motivation. How do we describe shapes? Well, the method that the groups I'm part of has been using is shape matching. Many, many different methods have been elaborated, and many theories, knife theories, have been given and proposed for registration problems. But defining and inferring population average, which I will call atlas or template, is something that is kind of a newer problem, newer issue. My feeling is that statistical estimation has to be done with taking into account the kind of variables they are. As Saran said, usually deformations, for example, are all taken as nuisance parameters. This is something that we don't want to do. We want to really say that they are not observed variable and consider them as random variable. And so we will get information from those variables. And the second point is, we want to do proper statistical model. For me, it's generative. Why? Because it gives you a path which could explain how your data are generated. And this is also a model, a framework, which leads to consistent estimators and also, this is a consistency issue, and also some algorithm that can be used to deal with this problem, which are also convergent. So I will make a slight difference between consistency of the estimator and convergence of the algorithm. So these are two notions that I will distinguish. And the last point is discrimination and classification. I won't talk about this in this talk, but basically if you have a generative model, you can use it to do some classification problem. Okay, so this is the outline. I will give three examples where generative model and stochastic algorithm can be used. The two first ones will be to handle the problem of population average, first in terms of gray level images, and the second one will be DTI images. I will go deeper into detail in the first one and just mention the basic ideas of DTI template estimation. And then if I have time, I will go further. Oops. I think I broke the pointer. Anyway.
We have another one.
No, that's fine.
No, don't give out
the pointer. Could be dangerous. So if I have time, I will go to the noisy ICA problem, where there is already one generative model that has been proposed, and the way people are using it is not stochastic algorithm. So this will be another problem. So first, let's deal with what I call Bayesian mixture effect gray level template. The framework won't be diffeomorphisms. Diffeomorphism is one step further. So we're going to first start with non-rigid deformation, but just small deformations. So just linearized deformation. And I will apply my deformation to my template to see how close it could be to my target. It's easy to compute because everything is determined by one single velocity vector field. And it's pretty relevant for some application that I will show. Of course, we don't have invertibility of the deformation, so this is one problem, but Sarah already talked about one possible option. So the solution previously given for population average could be, well, choosing one. So this is a kind of toy example, but handwritten digits are a good example of geometric variability of shapes and images. So this is not so easy to deal with. But anyway, I will show both those two examples, so handwritten digits and medical images. So if you pick one of them, you have two problems. The first one is that you will pick a discrete image. Second problem, it will be obviously noisy. So this is something you don't want for templates. The second solution is, well, proboscis means, so you've seen many things. So this is the small deformation problem. So instead of just maximizing over the template, you maximize over the template and the deformation. This, well, minimize this energy. So again, applying the deformation to the targets means that you will have to interpolate. And this is something, again, that we don't want to do. Because what you just know is the gray level number on one location, one single pixel. You don't know the information between pixels. And of course, if you interpolate, you kind of guess what is in between. But there is some guess somewhere. So usually the right way to do is to apply the deformation to the template and not to the target, which of course means that you will need a continuously defined template on the whole domain. There was a statistical interpretation of this model by Glasby and Martin 2001, which says that what you see through a deformation is your template plus an independent Gaussian noise with variance sigma squared. But this model is not a generative model. Once you have I0 and maybe sigma, you cannot reconstruct any of the targets. You can just have, at least if the deformation is invertible, you can have I0 of x minus v of x and get something close to what you see. But you don't know anything about first the deformation and what is really in the generative model that could generate your data. So these are three problems that we try to give a first solution. So how we did this is to try to describe the data sets as some identically distributed and independent sample of some parametric generative model, statistical model. Our model will take into account first the template, but also the deformation rules, because if you have, let's say, 100 per people in your data set, you want to know what is the good behavior of your deformation. What is the typical things that you will observe in your data set? And somehow it will help you to see if a new image is part of these kind of behavior or not. And we also try to learn the noise. So I put here the space V, define the space V norm. It's the norm of the Hilbert that Sarah just mentioned before. To avoid the problem of interpolation and all the thing I mentioned before, we want to learn an intrinsic template, a weighted term, and the geometrical behavior. Of course, if we want to learn I0 on the whole domain to avoid interpolation, we will have a function to learn on R2 and R3. So this will be a big estimation problem. So we decided to reduce the problem to a finite dimensional problem using some kernel interpolation. So basically we say that at each point x of the domain, what we can see is an average of what happened on fixed points k p 1 to kp around. So with some weights given by a kernel. So the kernel is fixed, the points are regularly distributed on the domain, and these are hyperparameters that you have to choose. Same for the deformation. To reduce the deformation to some finite dimension space, you use the same kind of trick. So with this, what we have to learn is the parameter alpha, which is just a vector, sigma squared. And to get the geometrical behavior, we introduce a prior on the deformation coefficient beta, and these are the this is the law that we want to learn, at least some parameters, because we will use parametric model. And when you see this, those variables become unobserved random variables. This is exactly what they are, because when you have an image, you don't observe any deformation. You guess it. You guess it. So here is the first model. The generative model can be seen this way, and given some Bayesian law first that we put on the parameters, you can draw some deformations, and then with these deformations deform the template, add some noise, and then get a new image. Of course, this is the other way around we want to treat the problem. Looking at this, how can we estimate those two? Well, three. One thing that I want to mention is that we want to use very small sample size data set. So we put a prior on each parameters because it will regularize the estimation problem. And another thing is, people have been doing matching, warping with different methods for about a decade now. And so we have a first guess of what could be our parameters. For example, the covariance matrix here, which is correlated to the kernel of the Hilbert space, we know basically that some kernels are good and some are not. So this could be our prior. This simple model is saying that one data set can be summarized with just one template and one covariance matrix. But when you have outliers or when you have different population in your whole data set, you might want to go further and say, well, my population might be one or two or three different small population with their own template and covariance metrics. So this is what he's written here. Means that we have a label, so each image is set to belong to one or another component. For each component, we have a set of the same parameter, geometric and photometric. Then, knowing this, the distribution of the labels, you can pick one label, with this draw one deformation and reconstruct one image. Of course, again, this is the other way around. We want to treat the problem. Knowing this, we want to go up and know all of them and row as also. Oops. So here it's just schematical summary of what happens. We have hyperparameters, which codes our population factors, which are the fixed effect. So for the whole population, we have template, covariance matrix, and noise, M, because we have M components. And then you have an observed variable coded through these parameters. So the label, the deformation, and the random noise. And then with those, you can draw some images. So now how to learn from all the whys the parameters. We decided to use the maximum posterior likelihood optimization. So theta is the arg max of the posterior distribution. And in practice, we use EM algorithm. So basically, since we have unobserved variable and we want to maximize the likelihood, this is the usual way to treat this problem. So I will just explain things for the simple models in one component, but when things will be different, I will just mention it. So let's say that we have to compute the posterior distribution of the unobserved variable, which are the warping variables, for the E-step, and then maximize this expectation over this distribution of the complete log likelihood. As in most of the case, our E-step is not tractable. So let's just first mention the M-step. The M-step, for example, just for the update of the covariance metrics, since we have chosen the conjugate prior, we have a closed form which enlightens the importance of the prior. So just imagine we don't have any observation, so n equals 0. We will rely on our prior. And if we have many more images, and the more we have, we will forget about the prior and just use what we have. But anyway, this matrix will always be symmetric and definite, and positive definite. So we won't have any problem to invert it or process the iterations. So, if I had no... Yeah?
I'm sorry, real quick. You said we won't have any problem converting it. Do you have any idea on its conditioning?
On the what? The conditioning? No, actually I don't. I didn't check. But since this prior, the prior we use is comes from a Gaussian, a real smooth Gaussian kernel. This is a really good matrix with a good conditioning. So I don't have any doubts about this. If I knew that Sarang would mention that the problem of estimating the E-step with noisy data was was with the mode approximation EM was a real problem, I would have shown that what you talked about, this step function. But anyway, I will just mention it as you did. So the usual way to kind of shortcut the E-step is to use a mode approximation of the posterior distribution. Basically, instead of computing the low, you said that you approximate it by a Dirac function on its mode, saying that it's just one single distribution. But this doesn't work when you have noisy data. The algorithm, even if the model is and the estimator are consistent, the convergence of the algorithm cannot be proved and can even be shown to fail. So we need to find some other solution to be sure that we will reach the map estimator at some point. So this is something we did with Estelle Kuhn and Alain Trouvé. We used a couple version of the SAEM with some Monte Carlo Markov chain method. So SAEM is stochastic approximation EM. So this has been introduced by Dolion-Lavielle-Moulin in 1999, and MCMC procedure by Kuhn and Lavielle in 2002. But basically, the problem they were dealing with was finite dimension and compact space variables. We have Gaussian prior on our deformation space because we want the deformation to be able to go as far as it wants. So we could not use directly what she did in her PhD thesis, and we had to generalize this. But the basic idea is, instead of computing the posterior distribution, you simulate one single element of a Markov chain with its transition kernel, which gives a convergent Markov chain with posterior distribution as our stationary distribution. Means that if you fix theta and if you run the Markov chain, you will reach the posterior. but you only pick one step. And then you do a stochastic approximation on the complete log likelihood and maximize this new quantity. And you start with Q equals zero. We chose a hybrid Gibbs sampler, which is sometimes called just called Gibbs sampler, to generate our Markov chain. Since we have a simple model, which means that at least we have an exponential family model, we can just use the sufficient statistics, and we have a closed form again for the maximization step. So this part is still something we can do. And since we have this problem of random unobserved variable, we need to project on some random growing set of compact set as long as the reiteration goes. So just imagine you sample one beta and it goes out of a current compact set, then you project it back and start again your process, so your algorithm. And of course, you increase the size of the compact set as long as the iteration goes. So this is this is the simple case. We tried it on the complex models, the multi-component model. Unfortunately, we reach a pretty common problem in statistics, which is trapping states. When you say that one image belongs to one component, and you try to simulate your Markov chain, you take into account that you are already in this component, and you try to reach something which is the template of this component. So of course the deformation that you will compute and simulate will most likely be the one that will fit the component you are already in. And of course the probability that this particular deformation will enable you to go to be closer to another template is really low, and usually under the computer precision. So this is what we call trapping states. So we had to consider another simulation method, and the simulation method we used was to say, okay, well, for each component, we will run a Markov chain as long as we need. So this time, not one single step, but NL. L is the iteration of the EM algorithm, well, SAEM. And then with those quantity, compute an approximation of the weights of each class. And when you have this, you can pick one label and then pick the deformation of this particular class component, let's say. We know that this is correct because we have here a Markov chain that we have run enough time to say that this is a good approximation, at least when one L is missing here. When LL goes to infinity, this will converge toward the right weight. So these models and the two stochastic algorithms have these nice properties that with this, the estimator is consistent, means that if you have an infinite number of images, you know for sure that you will reach the map estimator. And we have convergence of both stochastic algorithms, means that fix the number of images, let's say n. Now, if you leave your algorithm run an infinite number of iterations, you will reach this map estimator given that you have n images. Now, images. So here is what we get on the 100 digits USPS database. For the 10 digit, we had 20 images per class, and these are the template that we got. With 20 images per class, it's pretty good guess of what could be a template. And just remember the kind of data set that I had few slides before, this looks like this. So with these, and I have 20 of these, I can, well, the algorithm at least, can get this. And when you have 40 images per class, so one class is one number, when you allow two components, this is what you get. So basically it does a pretty good job. First, we have separated different topologies, two with and without loops, seven without and without bars. And then the other clusters are pretty relevant. When you see the six, this is good estimation of what six could be, or even the fourth. So it's actually what we were expecting. And when you look at the geometry, so this is the training set we have, and this is 20 images that we have drawn. Since we have a generative model, we can generate new data. So with the prior, the Gaussian kernel that I was talking about before, so this is what things would look like if you were using your prior. And this is what we get after learning with 20 images per class. So I put two lines for each digit because we have a Gaussian distribution for the vector beta, which is symmetric. And of course, when you learn one step plus beta, you learn minus beta as well with the same probability. So when sometimes you have really weird deformation like this 9, when you do the inverse, you see that it really looks like some nines that we had here in the data set. So this is not because we had learned something wrong. It's because with our model, which is symmetric, we also learn some really weird features. So this is one question that we have to work on next. And when you have noise...
It almost looks like the small deformation assumption is coming and giving you.
Yeah.
Yes?
Yeah.
I mean, that's nice. I mean, that's great to see. Right? It should. I mean, look at the 9. It's not the 4th one, 8th one. It's like this 11 or 12.
Yeah, again.
You know, that's clearly, and what's going on is that the 9 above it is small, and you're clearly carrying it.
Yes. Yeah, with something nonlinear, we will probably not have those
kind
of problems.
You know, I totally missed where in the formulation is the mixture model getting selected. You know, where are the, you know, how are you consistently estimating? You're basically consistently estimating the number of templates?
Or you're setting
that as a parameter, and then you get a solution, then you change the parameter.
What we say is we allow a fixed number of components, let's say 15. But of course, if you just need 5, the algorithm, since you have a penalization with the prior, will only learn 5 or 6, but not more. So the number of components is learned itself. There is an upper bound, but that's it.
And so what was the upper bound when you discovered 2?
Oh, we said we want 2, and of course digit 2 wanted 2, but when you use the whole USPS database, which is more than 7,000 images,
yeah,
and we use 15 components, all the 15 components of digit 2 were full. Because you can find 15 different shapes for 2s. But of course for digit 1 only 4 or 5 were full. The other ones were empty. It didn't need to go further and fill up more.
So you still really, you know, I mean, I couldn't believe you solved the model of the problem. The model of the problem is that, so you still then have to think through, you know, the model of the problem. And you've got 15, but we look at it and we say, oh, there's only 4 out of 15 or something.
Well,
or, I don't know. Or do you think
you can still allow many more than what you think you would have. Just imagine you say, well, my data, there must be 2 or 3 components. I will just allow 5.
Yeah.
And probably
so
the
then
two
with a mixture on 5.
Yes. And you will end up with a mixture of 3 only.
Yeah.
Okay, so when you have noisy data, which was the point of using statistical stochastic algorithm, such as those, this is what you get as a template. So again, this is really good job. There is no noise anymore. And this is what the geometry is. And you see that the geometry is really, does really look like what we had before, and the noise doesn't really affect what we get. So we really managed to separate the photometric part from the geometric part. Again, you have features when you have big nines and small nines here, for example. But, well, this is the model problem. Now with, well, this doesn't look good on big screen anyway. So this is what we can have with little patches around the corpus callosum. I have 47 images, and this is the gray level mean, really simple gray level mean. And this is what we get with this algorithm. So you see that the shape of the corpus callosum is much more... Sorry. I'm breaking everything. So you see that both the corpus callosum and this part of the cerebellum are much more relevant here. And if you say that you want two components, well, you see that you have two different shapes. One is like a curved concave, and the other one is convex. And here you have 1, 2, 3, and 4 branches, and then you have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 here. So, this is something that we could expect. But of course, these images are so different from each other that we would need probably 4 to 5 different components. But again, if we don't want the component to be empty, or if you don't want to have prior instead of what you learn, you need more images. So this is a trade-off that you have to consider when you say that you will fix the upper bound 2 or 3 or 5 components. And these two images are just to show the robustness of this algorithm with the exact same algorithm, same hyperparameters. So I didn't change anything. I used the edges. So it's just a canny filter on the image, on the previous images, and I use this as my data set. And you can see here the gray level image where you can see nothing, the gray level mean, and this is what we get. So, well, we have something, again, which looks like the boundaries of the template we had before. So we can use this algorithm both for gray level or binary images. So this was, the Bayesian mixed effect gray-level template model. And another problem where you can use generative models and stochastic algorithm is to try to find a DTI template. So our goals are to estimate the template of diffusion tensor images on a given region of the anatomy. We consider each voxel independently. And we don't want to use anything else but what is acquired, basically the diffusion weight images. So they are gray level images. You have a certain numbers of them for subject, let's say 18. And these are the images that you acquire. These are the images that you can see. So this will be our data set. And of course, what was done before was from those images for each subject, you use a least square approximation or minimization of any kind of energy to compute some subject DTI, so you have n DTIs, and then you average them to get the template. But again, you consider these as nuisance parameters, which they are not. They are just not observed. So when you go through the same approach, you say what you observe are those gray-level images, m per subject. M can vary, of course. You have hidden variables, which are each subject DTI, and directly from those, maximizing a likelihood, you want to estimate your template. So these are some results on synthetic data. So I took two different tensors, template tensors, and I draw some images, some DWIs, but just to show you, these, for the first one, these are the tensors that I for five of them of the population I had. So I have my template tensor. I generate some deformation, well, some modification of this tensor, which will be my subjects. And from those, I can generate the DWIs. And then, forgetting about these, I try to re-estimate my template. So I compare here the least square approximation, the fast approximation with mode EM, which I didn't describe in the BME template, but Saren talked about, and the stochastic EM on the two sets of a tensor image, well, DWI. So I have 50 random samples. In each sample, I have 15 subjects. And I just had 7 gradients, so M equals 7. And this is what we get. So when you compare the mean square error and the mean FA and mean ADC, there is a better here, a good improvement compared to just the least square method. For example, you have a lower mean square error, and you are closer to FA than what people are using right now. And if you want to see the effect, this was my true template. And this is the least square estimation, mode estimation, and stochastic approximation EM. And you see that here you have something which looks alike, and here you overestimate the anisotropy. So the tensor is kind of a little fatter.
Stephen, just remind me, did you use real least square or log normal?
Log Euclidean D square. So do I have another 2 minutes? Okay. So for the DTI, we're still working on real data to see what are the results on real images. But, well, it's kind of promising. And so the last thing I'm going to show is noisy ICA. So noisy ICA is a way to get information from a database. You can use PCA, you can use ICA, you can use noisy ICA. So noisy ICA just say that each vector, so an image, you just vectorize the image. You can use any kind of data, but say that you have a vector. What you observe is a matrix which is not square matrix, multiplied by a vector of a really smaller size. So y is a size p, and p is really smaller than the size of xy. So you really want to reduce the information to some really important components. And they are independent, statistically independent. And you say you have a noise, of course, because you don't explain everything with just, let's say, 5 component with 100 images. So this is a model that has been already given. This is a generative model. So the usual model is to say that those are the observation, those y's are unobserved, and there is a distribution that either you want to learn parameters of or not. The usual distribution here is the logistic distribution. But you can, well, we've tried some other distributions. And with this model, you can use either the fast approximation EM, fast approximation with mod EM, which has been used already, or you can try something which is supposed to converge. I haven't proved anything yet, but I hope it's going to be okay, which is the stochastic algorithm. So using this kind of algorithm to treat this problem, this is, for example, what we got. So each data, so my x, one x is dimension more than 3,000. Each element corresponds to a point on the surface, and it's the log of the Jacobian of the deformation, which is LDDMM. Am I right, Anshi? Okay, so these are Anshi's data. And I use 101 subjects and try to find just 4 independent components. These are the 4 independent components. And what is amazing is that we have chosen different distribution here. But these seems to be really stable around, well, come on. Okay, all right, there. And we still have to see if those four are significant or not, t-test, cross-validation, anything that could tell us if whether or not it's significant or if we have to go a little further. But at least Anshi told me that it looks like something relevant. So I think we can probably try something else. So this is just this is just another way to get information from huge data. You use PCA if you prefer PCA, but this is just another way to have just a few elements. So when you use PCA, you will have many components that have zero eigenvalue corresponding to it. Here, you never have this because you say, I just want 5, 20, or 100. So this is up to you. So, well, as a conclusion, I just want to say this was an advertising to generative statistical model, which is, for me, a good way, a good framework to design and infer population average. And stochastic algorithms are very versatile. You can use them in any kind of estimation problem that you have where you were about to use EM and when you cannot use regular EM. Thank you.
Oh, Xavier.
Yeah, just a small question on the noise. What type of noise did you create on the PCI data?
It's Riesian noise.
So the Riesian noise, what is, do you have to try out the conjugate prior to the...
No. We use, so the unobserved variable are the six coefficient of the log of the symmetric matrix.
Okay.
And on this, we put a prior. And then the next step is, given those, we took the exponential to get the tensor. And with this tensor, we put it in the Riesian noise to draw a gray level image with something which is the usual expression, what you observe for gradient G equals what you would observe with gradient zero exponential minus B G transpose DG.
Because it's also corresponding, the Riesian noise is corresponding to a Gaussian noise actually in the complex.
In the Fourier domain.
So what about considering that phase is an observed
could be, sure. This would be another model, of course. For example, we first try with the DTI itself as an observed variable, then we move to the log just because it has better properties and looks more coherent for the moment. But of course, there are many other models that you can draw. And when there is something that you don't observe...
But wait, it should be... I mean, in theory, this is equivalent.
Yes.
The Riesian noise is exactly the marginal.
Yes.
It's made numerically that you get better results.
Yeah, that would be a good way to verify for sure that the numeric is actually converging to all the standard.
Sure. Yeah, something we can do.
Any other questions? Okay, let's thank all the speakers.